And I think it has to do with the election. And I think the debate caused a shift last night.
I just won 2 club championships, not even senior. To do that, you have to be quite smart, and you have to be able to hit the ball a long way. He doesn't do it. He can't hit a ball 50 yards.
Now it's turned into a schoolyard, my dad can beat up your dad, I can hit the ball farther than you.
You can see he is 6'5" and only 223 pounds. The reason I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. I was an 8 handicap, 8. But I have, you know how many?
Don't worry. 19-year-old Matt, which still lives in here, okay? Love it. That was awesome. I was like, yeah, this is cool. Wait, but this sucks. Wait a minute. To my 7-year-old, he has to grow up in this country.
I told you before, I'm happy to play golf if you carry your own bag. Think you can do it?
Let's not act like children.
I just lost it. I'm like, this is what it has come to. It was a.
Well, welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show, Garrett Lail, with my partner in crime, Matt Dahl of ARPG in Las Vegas. Thank you for joining me again, brother. I always enjoy it. We are here to help you try to understand what's going on in the markets in words you can understand instead of the normal industry jargon and BS that is so common on your popular news outlets. I don't know where to start. We had a debate last night. Is interesting the right word? I had my sister texting me last night about 10:30. She said, "Please tell me you're watching this." I said, "Yeah, I am, and I'm trying to work while I do it, and my work is getting progressively worse as I get dumber as I listen to these two guys talk." So I only watched it really so if we needed to talk about it today, we could. Now I kind of wish I hadn't.
But, honestly, it's one of those situations where I wish I was like close friends with Shane Gillis, the comedian, and just have him sit there and do his Trump impression while I was watching the debate. Like, I did not have sex with that porn star. You know, I just lost it. I'm like, this is what it has come to. You know, this guy's saying he doesn't even know what he's talking about, which is, to be fair, neither of them are wrong, but you know, it was I think Lindsey Graham said it best. I never want to see that again. It was bad. It was bad, hideous on every level.
It was hideous to watch. I hated, it was one of these things where every single time, I had it on my phone just over here while I was doing some work, and I just kind of glance over at it once in a while when I would hear something just so stupid. And when they started debating their golf handicaps, that was like the rock bottom moment for me, because it's like, I can hit a ball further than you. No, you can't, Joe. No, you can't. I won my club championship. No, you didn't. No, I could beat you at golf. And it's like, oh my gosh, seriously, this is not the purpose of a presidential debate to discuss which 80-year-old golfer is the best.
No, I'm sure the Chinese Politburo and Xi Jinping and Putin and the Eurozone Fed chair was probably going, oh, I'm feeling confident about the leadership of the United States. You know, what an absolute disaster that was. But it served its purpose. It's like anything else. It served its purpose. It shed light on the two candidates in a way that only a debate can do. So
that's for sure, my friend. We
can like it or not like it, but the people have spoken, and those are the candidates.
I am seriously. I may write you in on my ballot. I don't know if I can cast a vote for either of them. Are you available if we get enough? If we can drum up enough support, is Matt Dahl available for the 2024 election, or is that too short notice?
I don't know, man. I wouldn't want to take a pay cut.
Good point. Well, one thing it has not affected is it's not impacted the markets. So our ineptitude as a government, or as our government leaders, or I guess I should say the ineptitude of our government leaders has not hampered the markets. That's for sure. We've overshot your landing. 5350 is your year-end target. We're sitting almost 5500 now. So within, I guess, about 3/10 of 5500. So, and you had some spot on. I want to talk about that a little bit. You sometimes watching you talk is just like, it's like watching a movie you've already seen 100 times, because you just nail it.
Well, I think the market's definitely going to fall into our bull case this year of the 5,600, right? 5,350 was our base. 5,600 was our bull case. 5,050 was our bear case. Clearly, I think we're going to be near or even above our bull case. And that's okay. But at the end of the day, there, you still have to do the mathematics, right? And we're looking at it this morning as we sit here, right now at basically 5,500, S&P 243 for 2024 and 278 a share for 2025. We're sitting at 21.2 times earnings right now. So there's not a lot of room to expand from 21.24. Okay. What has to sort of grow the market from here is earnings. Earnings are really going to have to do its thing. Now, back to the previous show, is I disagreed with a certain person that came on, a Wells Fargo guy, saying that the only catalyst for the next few months is earnings. And I disagreed. I thought that yields or a cold CPI number could alter that and bring yields down and the market would rally. So I think the market has now done a lot of that price work. It's done a lot of the price discovery into a cooling inflation regime, into a Fed cut cycle, not a drastic cut cycle, but a soft landing normalization. We talked about normalizations versus intervention last week, a normalization process of both policy rate, economics, GDP. And I think that's what's going to take place. So to move the market from here, it's going to take a lot of expansion. I mean, if you're looking at $278 a share next year and $247 a share this year, okay, if you take an average trailing multiple of 22 times on $247, $246 a share, you're like $54.50, okay? So if you take the $277, $278 at 5,600. There you go, 20.15. I mean, and that's kind of what we're thinking. So if we finish this year at a 20.15 multiple, that's 5,601, right? So yeah, that to me seems like a good strong multiple for the economy that we're going into, which is, don't get me wrong, it's a good economy. It's not that blow the cover off the ball, you know, hell's bells. Turn Metallica on, you know, drive your 78 Camaro down the highway with an oil leak, rock and roll time. Okay. It's good. And if you look at the previous quarters, right? And this is again back to normalization of economics. And people, there's a lot of hand wringing right now in regards to Q1 2024 GDP. Okay. Q1 2024 GDP was revised yesterday up from 1.3. to 1.4, not very much. But again, if you take the trade deficit away from that calculation, we were at 3.2 on an annualized basis. So trade deficit is really strong. And I think if Trump gets in, that trade deficit will reduce significantly because Trump will want to do a lot more exporting against the import side. Okay. But back to last year, okay, Q1 of 2023, we were only at 2.25 annualized rate. Q2, 2.06, barely higher than we are now, okay, a year ago. Now, it wasn't until Q3 and Q4 that we had those outsized GDP numbers, okay? Q3, we ran an annualized rate on GDP of 4.9. It just spiked, and that sent yields nuts in October, in October, and that's what pulled the market down, right? That really pulled that market down. We had that low on that, I think it was October 27th of 41.17 on the S&P. And that's what took place. And then Q4, we had an annualized rate of 3.4. So again, spike and normalize. And then now 1.4. And it looks like estimates for this quarter that were at the very last day of this quarter, as we sit here on June 28th, in the year of our Lord 2024. Okay. We're looking at about 2.25 annualized for Q2. And we're starting to normalize again. So spike came down. Probably going to go back up, and we're probably going to finish in that, you know, I would say high two, low three range for this year, probably in the high twos for next year. Okay. So things look good. Yeah, things look good. Decent GDP growth. We're looking at 12.25% earnings growth for next year. Okay. I don't know. I wish I had a number on what analysts are looking at as far as corporate tax policy is concerned. Right. So is this pure earnings growth? Is this top line sales minus another one percentile in corporate tax cuts, or if Joe Biden wins, are they going to have to say, okay, now we have to look at top line sales and add 7% in corporate taxes to that number, thus, you know, diminishing actual net income? How does that look? What does that look like? Right?
Yeah. So I want to let's go back to last week's show here.
What's going to catalyze the market? What coming up can catalyze the market? Will it catalyze the market to the downside? Will it catalyze it to the market to the upside? And what's the likelihood that the data that we receive is going to catalyze it up or down? For instance, the CPI report coming in on next Tuesday. Okay. Consensus estimate is 0.3 month over month. Okay? If it comes in at, you know, 0.2,
which it
did, a little bit lighter. Okay, and the bond market comes down to 4.25,
which it did.
The market's going to like that,
which it did. So, you nailed it. I mean, that's pretty much exactly the way things played out there.
To do that, you have to be quite smart,
right? And I think, and that's what the market was sort of looking for was sort of the first quarter inflation numbers. Are they sticky? Right? Because we know historically that inflation is nestled in that first quarter of the year, because lots of price increases happen when companies roll into the new year. That's when they do their price increases. That's typically what happens. But was this going to be a situation more like the last 2 years where we just had just this ongoing inflation throughout the year? And it looks like that has rolled over. It looks like it's rolling over. In fact, PCE, which is the preferred gauge of inflation that the Fed likes, came in. This morning, consensus was 0.13 month over month. Core PCE consensus estimate was 0.13 month over month. Came in at 0.08. 0.08 is what, 1% on an annualized basis? 1%. Okay. So what's that telling the market? And again, this is where things, there's a lot of cross currents right now. Okay. There's a lot of things happening. And I'm looking really closely again. I'm starting to spend I'm falling back into the bond market side, okay, you know, and I'm trying to figure out what they're thinking, and I have a guess, not sure how right or wrong I'm going to be, but I have a guess, okay. So, PC came in lower than expected, okay. Personal income came in a little higher, 0.5 month over month over 0.4 consensus, okay. PCE year over year, core PCE, 2.6%, best since March of 2021. Okay. May core CPI was the best at 0.16, was the best in 3 years. Okay. So Target announced massive price cuts. McDonald's is now advertising $5 value meals.
Yeah.
What are yields doing today? Yields are up 9 basis points. Why? Why are yields so sticky? Why are they so sticky? Now, it's funny is now that we've gone through that 430 to 435 range, now that's acting as that sort of that technical ceiling. And I think it's bumping up against everything. It'll come back down. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's going to go back up. I think it's going to sort of float back down to the mid threes by the end of the year, maybe even the low threes. Okay. But why is it sticking around? And I think it has to do, and I hate that we have to bring politics into this. Okay. But this could be what we talked about last show, maybe the show before that, is the bond market's muscle memory from 2016. Okay. What happens? And last night was that debate. And as much as you and I like to stick to our markets, stick to our mathematics, this is an election year. And there is a massive disparity in the candidates and how they're going to approach economics, and how they're going to approach, you know, business and all those other things, and approach foreign relations and foreign policy, and all of those things are very, very different. So it will impact to some extent the earnings on the S&P 500 as it relates to tax policy. Okay. As it relates to regulation, you know? So, and that's obviously what a lot of people believe. And I don't think they're wrong, which is a very pro business stance. Okay. So is that the case? It could be. I don't know it, but I can't find a real reason. I mean, personal income up 0.5 month over month on a 0.4 consensus, but with PCE in totality coming in much, much lower than expected. Schiller home prices came in 0.38 month over month. Okay. a year ago, it was 0.71. There's just a lot of parts of inflation that are just cooling off. 55% of CPI components are back to pre-pandemic levels. So the average of 50%, right, going back 20 years, we're at 55. So more components are in a deflation cycle than are inflated. So there's a lot on the inflation side that's to be celebrated. We know owner equivalent rents and CPI is 42% of that calculation. Okay, Case-Shiller Case-Shiller leads the owner equivalent rent CPI calculation by about 16, 17 months, and it is just cratering. So the bond market knows this. The bond market's a very smart group of people. Okay, so why are they not buying treasuries like they have nothing else better to do? And I think it has to do with the election. And I think the debate caused a shift last night. Okay. So in our little huddle this morning we had with the advisors going over economics and markets and earnings and things like that. We conference room here in our little office, right? We went in to predict it. Right? We went in to predict it. And what happened is Trump didn't change. He's now 58%. He's going to win 58 cents. Biden went down quite a bit. Okay. So what made up the difference was actually Gavin Newsom, which I thought was interesting. So he's up to 17 cents from 5 cents. That's how they do it. Trump is up from 55 cents to 58 cents, and Biden is down to 33 cents from 45 cents. So
he went up 12 points from the debate.
That's as of today. Yeah.
Hold up. Can I just take a moment to highlight that this actually just proves Trump would have shut up and not said a word. He would have won the debate hands down last night. He hurt himself by engaging. If he would have just shut up and let Biden talk, he would have been disappointing.
Trump could have stood up on the podium like a monkey and dropped an Amber Heard grumpy right on it and still won that debate. I mean,
so what you're telling me is that the guy who didn't speak last night performed the best out of all of the candidates.
I mean, it was It's not the debates I grew up. It certainly was not George Bush, Bill Clinton, Mitt Romney, Barack Obama.
There's a great clip out there of debates in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and then comparing it really to the most recent debates, probably the last two or three presidential debates, right, and just how much differently they treated each other. I mean, last night was hideous. I mean, I don't mean to keep making that like the key point of the show, but it was hideous.
No, they used to shake hands, and there was a lot of congeniality and mutual respect between the two candidates because they were very similar in a lot of ways. They had a few different, nuanced to different approaches. I get that, and they're part of their own parties, and they wanted to put on a good position or explain their position stronger than the other person and show strength and dignity and all of those other things more so than the other candidate.
He doesn't do it. He can't hit a ball 50 yards.
You can see he is 6'5" and only 223 pounds.
But now it's turned into a schoolyard, my dad can beat up your dad. I can hit the ball farther than you. You know, I did not have sex with that porn star. I mean, it was, oh, don't worry, 19-year-old Matt, which still lives in here, okay, loves it. That was awesome. Yes. Yeah. He's like, yeah, this is cool. Wait a minute, this sucks. Wait a minute, I'm 48. Like my 7-year-old, he has to grow up in this country. You know, a lot of good people have to grow up in this country. And do we really want our sons and daughters saying, hey, you want to be president of the United States someday? Well, the bar's pretty low.
Be more like that,
you know. So either you can be a mumbling, geriatric who probably, needs a roadmap to find his own bedroom in his house, or you can be just an absolute, wild man who, you know, has to deny he banged a porn star on a presidential stage while his wife was pregnant. You know, I hate this as much as I love it. Like, you know, that devil angel thing, right? All of our devils are like, all right, that was pretty awesome and pretty funny in a lot of ways, but that also sucked in far more ways. You know what I mean?
It's the same part of us that watches racing for the wrecks. You know what I mean? Like that same part. You don't want them to get hurt, but you do love to see a hard wreck. And then it's like, well, wait a second. I hope they're okay. I mean, like it's the instinct to watch a train wreck go by. I mean, it was horrible, but it was so bad, it was almost worth your time to watch. I don't know.
But back to how that inflects with our world. And this
right.
It was last night that made me grateful for Jay Powell. He's sort of our guy. He's our president, right? He's the Federal Reserve, so he's the banking money guy. He's the money president, right?
He's the one we listen to. Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about sharp, sober, matter-of-fact, witty, great, you know, I think he'd be a fun person to hang out with and have dinner with. And there's a lot of good things about him. That's what we have, thank God, compared to the actual president of the United States. You know, it's such a stark differential.
Yeah. The number one argument that I heard last night from the other candidate is that's not true. That's all they did was sit there and say that the other one was lying the entire time.
The idea.
But economically, so there's a little girl floating around on YouTube. I saw this video. It was hilarious of this, like, 9-year-old girl.
Just two ice creams with two chewing gums in it.
Yeah.
For bloody £9 for two of them.
£9 for two?
Yeah, £9. That is going to get nowhere. The one that comes on my street is either £1 a pea or £2. That is going to get nowhere with that.
No, he ain't, is it?
No, he ain't.
That's well bad, isn't it?
He should know. And he only does bloody card. Stood there with my cash. Bloody hell.
Wow. bloody hell. Whatever it was.
I mean, she is mad, but she is not wrong.
Oh, no. She definitely is understanding, you know, the pains of inflation. I guess we can call that consumer discretionary.
There you go. You know, she's not wrong. Inflation's crazy. And I know you said something that but two points that I want to kind of get your thoughts on. Number one, I went to a fast food place the other day I don't even think I ate. I think I just went through the drive thru with my kids. It was like $12-13 to get like two kids' meals, right? And I could remember, I mean, in college, that was like a weekend budget for me. Like that was my weekend fast food budget for me. But then at the same time, I fill up my car, same cost that it was, you know, 15 years ago at the moment. There are pockets of inflation. I mean, you know, the next time I go buy a car, it's quite a bit more expensive, but housing is going to be very localized and regionalized. So each individual American or consumer is going to experience inflation just a little bit differently depending on what they spend their money on, because there are these pockets of, you know, some things are running more than others. Food costs are astronomical, but, you know, others are a little bit, are more flatlined. But there was something you said on several shows ago. I mean, this was maybe even last year as we were first getting started on this, that consumer price, CPI is going to go up very quickly, but producer is not going to come back down nearly as fast. So producers, as their costs go up, they're going to quickly jack up prices to the consumers. But when their producer price index goes down, they're not going to be nearly as quick to then drop those prices back because it's easier to – right. So are we at a point right now – I mean, I'm hearing you talk about the inflation cooling. As inflation cools and the companies, they're still going to hang on to that higher consumer price as long as they can, which is going to leave them a really nice fat margin. And what would that be for stocks? That would be great for stocks. What's going on in the market? That's great. It kind of feels like we're in that season. Is that a fair way of saying, kind of, if I wanted to summarize it at a high level, we're in that season where producers jacked up the prices to consumers. Their costs have gone down. They've not taken it back down for their consumers yet.
You look at what is inflation, you know, at its core, what is inflation? It's a calculation of a rate of change. That's what it is. You're calculating the rate of change month over month, year over year, whatever it be, whatever mode, time mode you're using. So when you say, well, inflation's coming down or inflation will cool and get back down to 1% or 2%, that sounds great. Well, no, that's disinflation. That's prices going up at a much slower, more normal rate than what we've had. Right. But that doesn't mean prices are coming down. Okay. Whereas right. PPI, when they spike, and we actually see some actual deflation happening on the PPI side. We actually saw that we had some negative months over months last year. And that is your larger producers putting pressure on their suppliers for better pricing so that they can, you know, bring margin back. But when they do that, they hold on to their final sale price and they put that margin in. Right. Obviously that's good for the bottom line, for the net income number, which is good for earnings, which is good for stocks. Okay. So it's good for the stock market. Don't get me wrong, but here's the one thing that people need to understand. They need to get used to these prices. They're not going down. They're never going down. They will never go down. So they might stop going up. We might even have a year where we have very low inflation, less than 1%. That might be 2026. Who knows? But I don't ever see a situation where we actually see prices contracting by 3% or 4% or 5%. It's just, okay, here's the margins, or here's the pricing regime where new cars, healthcare, groceries, shoes, clothes, chairs, desks, drywall, whatever it may be, okay? And right. then in order to be able to pay for those things, you obviously have to make more money. And at some point, the ECI will get there and people will make more money and everything will just cost more, you know? And that's what happens. But the one thing that can really rein in inflation, the one thing that the United States has always had, our secret sauce has always been immigration. Okay, we have immigration, good, strong immigration. So what that does is that allows our GDP to grow at a faster rate than the employment cost index. So there's more production happening, there's more supply grows at a faster clip than income grows because of people coming in from outside of the country willing to work, supply more at a lower cost. Okay. And it's that productivity.
More output for a lower average correct. Cost of output.
So it's that productivity that has always kept our inflation in check. So when you print a lot of money, don't get me wrong, people say, well, we printed all this money and that's what caused inflation. Yes, sort of, yes. But it's more nuanced than that, right? It caused a lack of productivity. It caused, you know, everyone sat in their living room watching, Netflixing and chilling for 18 months, right? That's probably why all these babies are being born now. So, right? And we had no supply. We had a low supply, but we had this massive demand from all this money that was printed. So now that the money's been spent, of course, and supply is increasing because productivity is back. But that's the one, and that has always been Europe's biggest Achilles heel is – if you want more production out of your employees in Europe, you have to pay them more because you can't say, hey, if you don't work harder, I'm going to fire you because like in France, you can't just fire somebody. Okay. You have to go to the national labor board or something like that, or your local labor board and get approval to fire somebody. And that's how Europe is. Wow. So those employees over there can be much less productive for the same hourly rate versus American workers because American workers have direct dead competition for their job. We're like Nevada, we're an at-will state, okay? We're right to work state. I can fire anybody for any reason. I don't like your haircut, get out of here, okay? And that's what causes our productivity to be so strong year over year, decade over decade, right? And that's what has held our prices in line. So again, you want more production out of an economic structure like Europe, that causes massive inflation. Because you have to pay these people a lot more money to work harder because they won't do it any other way. They don't have to, right?
Right.
You know, they're like, no, you want me to make more baguettes? You pay me more money, you know? Yeah. So whereas we're like, no, if you don't make more baguettes, you can go home and I'll get somebody here that will. So that has always been our strength, okay? So, but of course, I don't mean illegal immigration. I mean good, strong, legal immigration, getting people in here – increasing demand, increasing supply, good for innovation, all of those other things. So, you know, and I think that again, that is also normalizing. And I know immigration is a big topic right now, but that will normalize no matter what.
Yeah. One last thing, and I don't think this is a big question. Hopefully not, because we're close on time. But you mentioned on the last show also that you do think that the economy and the stock market are much more closely correlated than people think.
And that's sort of the tricky part of economics as it relates to the stock market. The stock market and the economy are different. They're very, very different. However, the stock market and earnings aren't that different. Earnings in the stock market correlate 94%. Earnings and GDP and the economy correlate very closely too. I don't know what the exact number is. So they're not direct siblings. Well, they're not twins, but they're siblings, I would say. They're closer than that. So I sort of take a different position. I do think the economy is closer to the stock market than a lot of people give it credit for. As far as we look at different catalysts in the market.
How much of that is because of, I mean, I think this is a staple lesson to learn. They are correlated. They're not in sync with time because the stock market is predicting what's going to happen in the economy. So they are correlated. If you could take the stock market and fast forward it, or the economic data and fast forward that data, say 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, whatever, I think that's up to debate. But you would see an overlap in those lines, and that the stock market's a leading indicator of the economy, I guess, is the simple way of putting that. What I'm asking is, what's the difference? Is it that they actually are, that I know you think they, or you're saying that they are correlated, but to the average person out there who doesn't think that they're correlated as much as some might, is it that they just don't quite understand that there's a, you know, what we see right now is not in the stock market is not reflective of today's economy. It's reflective of 6 months from now's economy or a year's economy away from now economy. Or is it, even if you did put them, you know, sync them up time wise, they still wouldn't, they would still seem uncorrelated to some people.
Earnings are a direct result of people's ability to purchase products, right? And of course the company's ability to manage down the income stream to give them a decent net income. So if GDP contracts, very likely earnings will, we know top line sales will contract, very likely earnings will contract. Okay. So earnings can, so if you get GDP contraction two successive quarters in a row, you get a recession. Okay. So what we know is that the stock market bottoms almost exactly 11 months prior to the earnings bottom. If that makes sense. Okay. So exactly to your point, it's a forward discount mechanism. Okay. So we actually had two negative quarters in 2023. Okay. We had an earnings trough exactly 1 year ago. Okay. The market bottom was October of 2022. Right on schedule. It was about 9-10 months before the earnings trough. So there is correlation. There is a lot of correlation there. Now, there's a reasonable argument to be had that is it correlated or is it causation? Right?
Yeah.
Where the economy is cooling off. So then the markets, the equity markets and the bond or whomever, they start to pull capital back, which then increases the likelihood of a contraction of earnings because there's less capital available, there's less liquid in the market, earning or money becomes more expensive to get, so less of it will be future deals, innovation won't happen. All of those things take place. It's a very, very intertwined, complicated rubber band ball, if that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, is it correlation or causation or some of both? I think it's mostly correlation, but I think there is an element of causation involved in there too. But according to all the data that we have that we get from our groups is that earnings trough happens about 10 to 11 months after the market bottoms. So the market bottomed October 12th of 2022. So 10 months before. you know, after that would have been August of 2023. Okay. It looks like it bottomed in, you know, June of 2023. So it was pretty close. So the market really, the market does it, tries to do a good job to forecast what earnings are going to do, right, via stock prices. And of course, if earnings contract, actually they didn't contract in 2022 or 2023.
Yeah.
There was no growth from 2022 to 2020. It was like maybe 1%. Yeah. But what happens is the multiple contracted because it didn't justify, the multiple of the market was too high to justify the growth that it wasn't going to get. So what happens when you have earnings contraction, you also get a massive multiple contraction. And that's what brings those markets down 30, 40%, albeit for a short period of time, it still takes place. So the economy, if we have a poor, slow economy, and GDP that's not growing, earnings that aren't growing, we're going to get a contraction of a multiple. Even if earnings just go flat, we're going to get a contraction of the multiple, which will bring the market down, which will then cause, you know, people that, then it's called the wealth effect. Okay. And that's about a 4% spend to the consumer nationally is when, and it's, this is again, another, not to overuse the word nuanced thing. When people feel good about their investments and their 401ks, it's called the wealth effect. They tend to spend about 4% more, okay? Versus when they're, you know, the market's down, they're feeling, oh, crap, you know, I had X amount of dollars in my accounts, you know, 6 months ago. Now it's down 20%. I don't feel as good. Maybe the market's telling me we're going into another 2008 and the world's coming to an end. I'm going to hold on to my cash. So, you know what? We're not going out to dinner tonight. We're just going to go to the grocery store and buy something cheap. And so then you start to get that tightening of the belt, that tightening of the wallet, right? That takes place to a small extent. And it's never one thing. It's never one big, like, hash it comes down. This is the problem. This is what caused everything. And prah. Although there could be big issues like inflation that do that. But it's usually a group, several things combined, maybe one causing the others that creates sort of a snowball effect in that general direction. And then it takes, back to normalization versus intervention, it takes some sort of exogenous intervention, i.e. rate cuts, rate increases, something to normalize and get everything back on track.
That's a great point. I never thought about that, actually, but and it's a simple point. But because the stock market is forward-looking, when the stock market goes down, even though it's predicting an economy that makes me say, okay, I want to tighten the belt and not spend as much because the economy might be worse in a year. In reality, for investors, no, they have less money right now because the stock market has contracted. So they stop spending because they technically have less money. And then that causes the recession that it predicted to some extent.
Right.
Well, as always, man, you know what, Matt, I think you are probably, I say this very, very comfortably, I think you are the only person that I've ever met that I could chat finance and economics with for 45 minutes without getting bored by it. So appreciate your time as always, brother. For everyone out there, if you are looking for a sharp guy and a sharp team to manage your portfolio, do not listen to us on this show because we are here for educational and informational purposes only. But Matt can help you. He and his team at ARPG can be reached at
702-655-8300 or go to intelligentinvestment.com,
which you can find like right below in the description. So thank you, dude. We'll be back in 2 weeks and look forward to it as always. Thank you for your time.
Talk soon, my friend.
See you, bud.